now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this week I'm joined by Patty Barkley, Allison Rudd, and from the wonderful place we call the Midlands, it's Peter Lansley. Today we're going to be focusing on an incredible final day of the season, lots of ups and downs in the relegation battle, and also the perhaps not unexpected, but certainly sudden sacking of Carlo Ancelotti. We'll also be announcing our All-Star Premier League team of the season. So please join us for the next 40 minutes or so. It'll be some of the best football conversation you hear all week. Obviously, big news in the Ancelotti leaving Chelsea, but we're going to get to that in a minute because first we have to talk about this incredible roller coaster. Now, I live this, I have to say, in my home office, where I am fortunate enough, thanks to modern technology, to have four television screens plus a computer, two computers, in fact, where I can stream things legally, of course.
You're a Bond villain, aren't you?
I just thought, like, it's the last day of the season. If you're not at one of the games supporting your teams, or if you don't have to cover a game to actually work, this is the way to do it. And in fact, one of the channels, very helpfully, did this very cool around the grounds type thing, sort of live, which I think it was a Greek channel, which was very exciting. I saw people like talking about, ooh, how clever, Match of the Day did it last night. Well, you know what? Match of the Day, welcome to 1992. This is the technology we have. And just as a viewer and as a neutral in this case, I am kind of annoyed that people were denied this televisual spectacle. But I want to start with Lansley because I think Wolves staying up is absolutely incredible. Peter, how did he do it?
By beating the big teams, and even though they were losing to the little teams. I read in the Sunday Times yesterday that this is the most together team in the Premier League, and as someone who I have to admit hails from Wolverhampton, I was very proud to read that, and I have to agree with it as well. When they've been the underdogs, they've been fantastic. Man United, Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City, the big games against Albion and Villa, they came up trumps. And then when they have to bother with Wigan and Bolton and Blackburn at home, they've been fairly pants. But in fact, they've got 8 points against their bottom six rivals and 12 points against the top six sides in the country. So it's been that togetherness and that underdog mentality that's seen them over the line.
Now, Paddy, it's kind of a surreal situation where a team are 3-0 down at home, and then they kind of know, like, we can still lose this game, we just have to sort of nick one and whatever. It's not a situation you normally find yourself in. No. I mean, you could argue maybe in sort of two-legged European ties, sometimes you can lose and still win.
Yes,
here you're playing against a totally disinterested opponent, an opponent that already made its point. How did you see that?
Well, I thought the Wolves Blackburn game was the most nailed on draw of the Premier League season, and I just simply could not believe that these two teams wouldn't play a draw and bank on the other three threatened sides not all winning difficult games. If they had simply played out a draw, they would both have been safe. Everything would have been fine. And I think, in a way, it's a great testament to the honesty of English football that didn't happen. If I'd been the manager of one of those clubs, I would certainly have suggested it. I think it sort of edifies the whole drama. That game just contained everything that's unpredictable, everything that's nerve-jangling, because Wolves obviously just didn't turn up to begin with. Obviously, we couldn't watch all of the games at once. Only the match of the day team can do that.
And be
authoritative
and me.
On all. But I think it was an extraordinary. The whole day was dramatic. But that's the score that stands out for me.
You feel, Paddy, that Blackburn needed to win that?
No.
To show. I thought they did.
They
I was surprised
his
point. You said they were disinterested. The owners were there.
Those guys?
In those
ridiculous suits? Hey, come on. I mean, I actually think I'm only going on a limb for Steve Keen here, and then we'll have to move on. But this whole thing, everything's been treated with Blackburn. It's all been a gigantic joke that we in the media have put out. I know Sam Allardyce, a lot of friends in the media, and I know that a lot of good people on the staff there. And I think it's an open secret that people like Chris Samba and probably Ryan Nelson weren't exactly thrilled by what happened. But Blackburn are still up there. This Steve Keen, like Mr. Nobody, you know, go rent a bald man from Scotland. He did his job, right, Alison?
No, but he needs more than that. I think he needed to show that he could take a team and they could win and they could go out in a tiny blaze of glory. And they actually played in that first half, they played some nice football.
They
and
did.
he's been saying that week in, week out when they've been getting draws when they should have won, that we're a decent footballing side. And everyone's been laughing at him and saying, yeah, and you're not going to be there next season, Steve, so shut up. That man still believes he's in with a chance of being the manager of a Premier League club next season, and he wanted to prove that he had something about him.
Let's talk about another team that are staying up, I think very much against the odds, Wigan, because this is another sort of unloved team. Dave Whelan, £100 million he claims to have put in the club. The bottom line is ultimately it's about the players, it's about the staff, some of those people that are left over from the Steve Bruce era who've put together a team that played good football, and they went away to Stoke. And I watched this game, Alison. Stoke played. In fact, I saw shades of the old Stoke, the Stoke from 2 years ago. You know, it's the last game of the season. I said, all right, let's go back to just booting long balls, you know,
Ken
for
win,
once.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, after playing reasonable football this season, and Wigan, George Caldwell at the back, Al Hampsey, who I don't know what he's listed as, but he looks like he's 5'9" sometimes, you know, getting to every ball. It was just tremendous, no?
I, at the risk of being too girly about this, I thought the scenes from Wigan were the most beautiful and poignant of any of the relegation battle scenes. They're a tiny club and they're not favourites amongst journalists, because journalists say, well, they're so small, and normally they take a very small pocket of away fans to games, especially in London, and it's so easy to dismiss them as having no right to be in the Premier League. But they had their core fans there at Stoke. There was just some thinking that, and Wigan they've played exactly the same all season. They've always tried to play with a touch of flair and a tiny bit of arrogance and a sense that there's more to them than a team that scrap around the bottom. And that the way that Roddy Agar stood having scored, I just thought that was incredibly beautiful. It was just the most beautiful scene. And just to hear Wigan fans going berserk, which we don't do very often, and the fact that Martinez, he's such a lovely, lovely bloke, and his chairman has backed him, he played the football he wants to play. He's never changed that. He's never had self-doubt. He's always believed in them. And somewhere along the way, everyone will have doubted that he had the right to say that. And it came good. And I'm so pleased they're going to be there again. Mm. Again.
Lanzi, are you on board with this? Or is Alison being girly, as she puts it?
No, I would join her in her girliness there, because I think we're going to play some fantastic stuff. They've... you know, they've been inconsistent. Is this the first time they've won back-to-back games? But some of their play, as when Valencia was there, has been absolutely top class. And when the
you're talking about Valencia. Come on, say something nice about them this season, Lansley.
Yeah, absolutely. Gab, that they've continued that, and people like Tom Cleverley doesn't. You know, it's barely.
You mentioned
noticed.
Another United player. What are you, the editor of Red Issue?
Okay, Charles Nzogbe, he's a Wigan player, right?
Sort of, for now.
Yeah, well, exactly. Okay, let's. Well, no, I think they play some cracking stuff. Really incisive. They've been a little bit like Blackpool in that they've tried to build from the back, but they've got better players at the back.
I think
but now the question is, can they keep hold of Figueroa and Nzogbe, Rodallega, when you're getting 16,000 crowds? Can you see those guys staying?
James McCarthy's the one for me. The goal of the season. Scored the goal of the season.
Teenager, for those who don't know who he is. He's teenager, he's British, he plays behind the strikers.
He's opted to play for the Republic of Ireland.
He really is Scottish. I'm saying he was born in this on this sector.
Yeah, you're right.
He's one of your peeps.
But, I mean, he's a very good player. But I think that Alison touched on this when she spoke of Dave Whelan. I think that, there are exceptions that break this rule, but I think that the survival of Wolverhampton Wanderers and Wigan Athletic is a testimony to the importance of a good relationship between the chairman and the manager. In the case of Whelan and Martinez, they're rock solid. Steve Morgan and Mick McCarthy, as far as I can tell, seem to be rock solid. And if the chairman and the manager are rock solid, the team will be rock solid. And I think that clubs all over can learn from this. And I know you could throw the example of Blackburn Rovers at me and say, well, that proves you're talking absolute tripe. But it is generally true that, and Chelsea might learn from this, that if your board and your manager are together, you will have a team that's together.
Let's move on to the not-so-happy stories. Spurs against Birmingham City. Alison, I want to start with you because this was like sort of Spurs, like sort of last days coming out of school. It was just a bunch of dudes on the pitch, some of them good, some of them not so good. They were playing, they were pushed on by the crowd, they were out there having fun. And Birmingham just could not find a way to get the result they needed. I at one point I saw Craig Gardner, who'd already been booked, run into Ledley King in what was one of the most ridiculous attempts to dive of the season. And by the way, nice to see Ledley King out there. Hope we'll see him again sometime. But in the end, Birmingham kind of got what they deserved, right?
Oh yeah, I think so. The statistics post Carling Cup victory make it look like they couldn't handle glory, but I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, they're a thin squad, reliant on being able to churn out the same back four every week. And as soon as they weren't able to do that, I think the wheels came off slightly. I don't believe for one minute that psychologically winning the Carling Cup affected them at all. I just don't get that. And people who've suggested that, please explain in more depth, because that should really make you think, yeah, we can do this. But it's more, I think when people were asked for their predictions, most people said, well, I don't think Birmingham can go to Spurs and win. And that says less about Birmingham, actually, more about Spurs, who have this season, when the expectations and the pressure's been off, have produced their most beautiful free-flowing football. Right. And they were always going to play well on the final day of the season.
I actually thought they could win, to be honest. But, Lansley, because on the one hand, Peter, I want to blame the owners, because it's always fun to do so. But on the other hand, you could also make the point that, you know, he went out and he spent money on he chose to bring in Bosajor and Zigic and then didn't replace Benitez with a Benitez-type player until perhaps Obafemi Martins arrived, who then got hurt. So, can we blame this on some pretty crucial personnel decisions of McLeish, or do we just swallow the line that it's all because Scott Dan got hurt?
Well, I think they were like an old, like a 70s team, weren't they? Who had a best, whatever, 13 or something. Sure. And last year, on their way to finishing ninth, you know, highest finish in 51 years, I think they named the same team about 11 games in a row. And the point was always, yeah, but what about when you run out of steam? They didn't have the cups to distract them last year. This year, Barry Ferguson playing on through the final with cracked ribs, taking a jab to carry on playing afterwards when he palpably wasn't fit. And we say that about Scott Dan, Gab, but you're absolutely right, because that back four, he marshalled them while Johnson took the plaudits. He was the one who was just sort of moving them around. So when they lost Dan, they lost Ferguson on all cylinders, and then their strikers just fell one by the other. That thin team was just exposed more than anyone else. And yet, would you have had them not go for the Carling Cup?
No, I personally don't think there ever was a trade-off. I think that's just an argument that some people make. But, Patty, I want to ask you, I mean, you've obviously have a certain affinity with McLeish. You've followed his career. Yeah. I mean, you've got a good reputation. You've delivered a piece of silverware. You've just been relegated. Should you maybe look around and try to get a job in the Premier League? Or make noises to leave?
I don't think there would be a job for him in the Premier League. I think that...
So the only way he gets back is if he gets promoted back up.
Yes, and I think that... I would have thought so. I mean, I'm trying to look at... there's a surplus of talent over jobs available at the moment. I mean, there's not going to be... Unless Ian Holloway decides to go elsewhere, there's not going to be a vacancy, you know, at Blackpool.
He's not going to want to take the Blackpool job because that's still in the Championship.
We have in Britain, actually, an abundance of managerial talent at the moment. So I don't think there'll be a job for... Alex McLeish in the Premier League. I think there is a job for him, obviously, trying to get Birmingham back. I mean, that's a hell of a job.
Finally, we have to talk about the other team that was relegated at the weekend, and that's Blackpool going away to Manchester United 4-2. I'm going to file a super injunction against all of you now. Mm-hmm. Please do not use the word breath of fresh air when describing this team. Let's all recognize that they went out there with a bunch of players who most of us hadn't heard of. They played very good football. I'll remind you that when they played United the first time, at one point they were killing them and had the game in hand again this week. 2-1 up.
And Vidic should have been sent off as usual.
And you could make that point. And Evitt, you know, who I thought was pretty good this season. I mean, how he managed to overrun the ball on the first goal and then gift that silly own goal for the other goal, and then the fourth goal was scored by this Michael Owen chap. I mean, should Blackpool recriminate or should they just be happy?
It's all Holloway's fault, actually.
He
almost did it, didn't he? And the difference between doing it and not doing it was his attitude. I spoke to him after the Spurs game a couple of weeks ago, and he said, are Blackpool strong enough? Do they have enough to stay up? I don't think they do. He was preparing for defeat, for having lost the battle to stay up before it actually happened. He should have been much more bolshy. He's very funny and everyone loves him and everyone uses the phrase that's banned. But actually, when you analyse what he said, he didn't say enough to bolster the ego of those very lowly paid players. He needed to be bigger than he was.
You could say that, but I think that what we have to say about this season, and we never look for the good things, but what we have to say about this season, I've told you all along, that's what's going to happen this season is that a good team, at least one good team, is going to be relegated. Birmingham City aren't a bad team. Blackpool are a good team, and they've both been relegated. And what's more, even West Ham, who most people think have been an absolute disgrace, they've beaten all the top clubs. They've had great moments, and that's been the joy of this season. Everybody says, "Oh, we've beaten the top clubs, but we've lost points." Every supporters of every club will tell you, "We've beaten the top clubs, but we haven't taken points off the bottom clubs." That's the testimony to how good this league has been. And I'll tell you another thing, because there aren't any bottom clubs anymore. And the other thing we need to remember, if we're going to be positive, is that in 10, 20 years' time from now, Blackpool fans will look back on this season as heaven, and so will Birmingham fans, because a lot of water will have passed under the bridge of both clubs, and the Carling Cup win will be celebrated for what it was, a great victory over a very good side at that time, and Blackpool's season will be remembered for what it was, which was an absolute credit to that club.
Strip away all that beauty and the fun of it all. Do you not think Holloway was a bit too self-deprecating?
I'm not disagreeing with your point at all, but I think you also have to credit him for making complete monkeys of us. We all would have said they might get 2, 3, 4 wins all season, and that'll be great. And they've got a lot more of that, and they've been a breath of sea air.
On that note, since I'm sure, Lansley, there's no possible way you could sum up Blackpool better than Paddy just did, let's move on. Okay, so news breaks late Sunday night, and you can read about it in Matt Hughes' piece. Carlo Ancelotti does his press conference at Goodison, where Chelsea have just been beaten by Everton, and he gets approached by a chap named Ron Gourlay, whose day job is to be Chelsea's chief executive, who says, "Can I have a word?" And he tells him that his services are no longer needed. Now, I have to come out and say one thing in Chelsea's defense, which is probably the last thing I will say in the club's defense today, that We absolutely crucified West Ham and the anti-Trinity for sacking Avram Grant there and on the spot at Wigan. Chelsea have come out and said that they did this because they wanted to give Ancelotti time to say goodbye to the players, since, as footballers often do, they're all taking off at 5 o'clock in the morning on Monday. Make of that what you will. I don't think anybody's surprised. I've thrown this out before. Anybody want to argue that it was a good idea to get rid of Ancelotti?
Oh, I don't.
No. Don't tell me if you don't. Do you think anybody want to argue that point? Because I've been searching far and wide for somebody to make a cogent argument why this man should be sacked, and I haven't found anybody yet. Anybody prepared to do that?
I know lots of Chelsea fans who have been unimpressed with Ancelotti this season.
Apart from the Chelsea fans you happen to know, are you, Alison Rudd, prepared to make an argument why?
Yeah, I could make an argument.
Okay, go ahead.
Because he was successful with the team that he inherited that were inherently great. And what Chelsea do have, and people often forget, is they...
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A marvellous self-belief and a great team spirit. And for all John Terry's flaws, he doesn't half keep that team going as remembering their roots and that they love the fans and they have a connection and they're not just a group of mercenaries, and that's something Man City can learn from. They're a very strong-willed team who love winning and a great team ethic, with all the talent that they have. So Ancelotti inherits that, wins the double. Then things start to creak. There are the odd tweaks that need to be done. And you watch, in games that Chelsea have lost, you watch Ancelotti. He doesn't seem to... I know you can read too much into body language, but there is
I know you hate,
and I'm not saying it's the body language, but I don't, in terms of, you know, fact, I don't see him ever making changes or switching tactics, or he doesn't know how to turn something round that's going slightly wrong. He doesn't have that quality that makes a manager great. They know how to rescue a game when it's starting to run away from them. And he seems terribly passive. I mean, I think it's probably very hard when you have an owner as huge as Abramovich is, and who imposes signings on you, to know how to handle that. But there was a terrible degree of passivity about the man. Very polite, very, very lovely, but don't you need, if you're going to win the title, which is, and the Champions League, which is what Chelsea are supposed to be doing, you need more fire in your belly than that. So, and it's not, and for that reason, that's a good reason to sack him, because it's not working.
Okay. Thank you for attempting to make that argument. I really appreciate
that. Thank you for
that.
Not being patronizing.
No, I don't think any rebuttal is needed. But having had to play devil's advocate many times myself, I will, you know, I appreciate the effort you put into it. the point is, this guy's gone now. Patty, what should happen next, and what will happen next?
Oh, well. Where do we start? But I'll try and be cogent. The really, the culture of the club needs to change. I don't think... I think a lot of what Alison said actually did hit the nail on the head. If he did have a weakness in England, it was in not being proactive enough, in not changing matches. Of course, the one we all remember was when Mourinho outdid him. But, I mean, there have been other examples. But I don't think it's fair to judge him on that, because the politics of the club are such a mess. The power structure of the club is so diffuse that it's very difficult, even for a coach who comes from a country where the culture is to look after the first team. I think it's impossible for him to put on big enough blinkers to do that job. And so what Chelsea have to do is look at themselves and blame themselves for turning a double-winning team into one that... can't win the league or the cup or anything. I don't know who they are. I don't know what they've got in mind. It's quite difficult to discuss the affairs of Chelsea. But all I'm saying is that let's just suppose that was the scenario that someone in power at Chelsea had. Absolutely doomed. Because if Vandre Villas-Boas is the man I think he is, and he may well be just another young meteorite of a manager, but if he's the man we all think he may be, he will go to them and say, I ain't coming. Because you're a mess. You're just going to ruin my career like you've ruined Carlo Ancelotti's.
But Peter, I want to get your take on this, because I generally, I tend to actually back owners more than most people in this profession, tend to be anti-manager most of the time. However, I was kind of surprised that Goose Hiddink comes out, and I don't know the timing, I don't know what goes through his head or if those quotes are even real. They were on PA, so they must be true. When he comes out and he's like, oh, I've been Roman Abramovich's special advisor for the past 2 years, don't you know?
Who hasn't been Roman Abramovich's special advisor? There's Pete DeVista, there's Eugene Tenenbaum, there was Frank Arnesen, there's the Nigerian guy, there's...
The Nigerian guy's an assistant coach employed by the club, Michael Amanda, to be fair. I mean,
Bobby Campbell? Everyone has a piece. This guy must have bigger ears than Alfred E. Newman. Because everyone's got a piece of them. Actually, in the list of people who have Roman's ear, I completely forgot John Terry. And that is one possibility, that they could simply accept the de facto position and give him the title of manager, as well as the notion that he is it.
We read in some esteemed publications that Mourinho would like the job back if Abramovich would just go and bend one knee to him. What do you think about the possibility of Mourinho coming back to Chelsea and being loved again?
Well, it's funny because, first of all, obviously we know that the Church of Mourinho is a broad one, and you have the inner circle of acolytes living in their castles, and you have a slightly wider church and so on. This is a story that was doing the rounds a couple of weeks ago. It actually talked about a swap between Jose Mourinho and Carlo Ancelotti, with him going the other way. I honestly don't know. I wouldn't put anything past it. I think it would be very difficult for Mourinho, if Hiddink really is, the ghost in Roman Abramovich's machine, it would be very difficult for Mourinho to work with Hiddink, because we can all tell ourselves that they're all great mates and so on, but Hiddink has a certain philosophy of football. Mourinho has a different one. And by the way, the guy who's, I'm told, is sort of the front runner for the job, supposedly, if you believe this, in this Hiddink to take over as director of football scenario, which is one Marco van Basten, he's completely different from Hiddink. And this is what gets me, because this is what actually really angers me here. And I will go on a tiny mini 10-second rant, which is this. It seems to me that this is being done with no sense of logic. Hiddink's philosophy and Van Basten's philosophy, completely different backgrounds, different clubs, different personalities. They just both happen to be Dutch. And I could see somebody going like, ooh, Mr. Abramovich, why don't you get this man, Marco Van Basten? He was a really good footballer, he was a pretty good coach too. And look, he's Dutch like Goose, so they'll get along fine. And Goose Hiddink saying like, how much am I being paid? Oh yeah, sure, all right, Marco, come here, yeah. Come work with me. And Marco Van Basten saying, you know what? I don't have a job and I'm not going to get one because I absolutely sucked when I was in charge of Holland. That, oh look, I have a chance at Chelsea, let me start again. And you know what? My old teammate, Carlo Ancelotti, is such a nice guy. I'm sure I could ring him up and he'll tell me what I need to know, and this is my chance at this. This is the insanity. This is the lack of direction and logic. There is no reason whatsoever why these two people should be working together to run a football club.
Correct.
Okay, rant over. How about we talk the official game podcast team of the season, which I'm sure you've all prepared. Now, Allison is a veteran of this. She'll remember the way we like to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have the casting vote and you always vote for me. That's how I remember
exactly. Well, there's collusion. No, the formation is 4-3-3 because despite what that obscure magazine says, nobody plays 4-4-2 anymore. I will be lenient in allowing strikers as wingers and so on. You can tell me your midfield trio as a block. But basically, the point is we will be going around position by position, and you will make a cogent, you will make your nomination, you will make a cogent 20-second argument in favor of it. If anybody disagrees, they can make a cogent 20-second argument going dissenting, and then we will put it to a vote, and if we're all split, then I have the casting vote. Or if you vote in somebody ridiculous, I can just overrule all of you. Let's start with goalkeeper, and let's start with Paddy. Paddy, your choice.
Edwin van der Sar, simply the best. He's as good this season as it is. Frankly, I've watched his career for club and country. I think he's as good as ever. I can't believe he's taking his leave.
Time's up. Nobody's going to dissent anyway, right?
Yeah, no, van der Sar, definitely.
Okay, you're right back. Alison.
I went for Ivanovic.
Brano.
Partly because I can't actually think of another right back that I would pick. But I think he's an intelligent defender. He's big and he's a threat when he's up front for a set piece or just going forward. And I like his attitude. No nonsense and pretty consistent.
Any dissent? Paddy.
I know exactly, and I know what this guy looks like, but I don't know his name. It's either Fabio or Raphael. I think they're both absolutely thrilling players. And I think I'm going to go for Fabio.
I think he's played right back like three times all season for Manchester United.
Okay, Raphael.
That's fine. Lansley.
I've thrown in Micah Richards for his late runner form, starting to get near his potential.
Ooh, interesting choices. I am called on to decide. You basically, I am kind of shocked because, Alison, you've mentioned a guy who's really a central defender and looks like a cyborg. You've mentioned a guy who hasn't played half the season, Lansley. And you've mentioned two guys who look the same and ended up going for the guy who's really a left back.
So I didn't mention two guys used to play for Blackburn Rovers, and he was midfield anyway.
I am so tempted to make my own choice and choose the Blackpool right back, but I'm not allowed to do that, so I will go with Ivanovic because I'm contractually obliged to agree with Alison in these situations. Okay, I need two central defenders from you, Lansley.
Okay, from my bottom half team, I've got Scott Dann and Christoph Samba.
Scott Dann got injured and left his team in the lurch by going around saying, oh, I have a boo-boo.
Two-thirds of the season, he was right up there. And from my obviously team, I've gone for Vidic and company.
Okay, Dann, Samba, Vidic and company. It sounds like a law firm. Paddy?
Vincent Kompany and Gary Cahill.
I think by this point it's safe to say company's in.
Company's
Alison?
In and Vidic. I know why Paddy's not that keen on him, but he's had another awesome season. He really has. And there have been times when Man United have looked vulnerable and he stopped them leaking.
Kompany and Vidic. All right. I sense a bit of a Big Four bias thus far, but let's move on. Your left back.
Leighton Baines.
Ooh, Leighton Baines, a fashionable choice. Former Wigan star Leighton Baines.
No, he's elegant. He's elegant. He's lovely to watch. His set pieces are the most beautiful set pieces I've seen this season. I think he was slightly flaky at the start of the campaign, but his stature has grown, and I just think he's an effective and lovely player to watch.
I would accept Leighton Baines, a terrific season. I would accept Ashley Cole, who's so good you just don't notice it anymore. But Jose Enrique, the Newcastle left back, has been my left back of the season.
I like Enrique. He's in my lower half team, but I'm going for Gareth Bale at left back in this team.
Okay, Gareth Bale at left back. I get the vote on this because Gareth Bale doesn't actually play left back. I have to go with Leighton Baines. Okay, now this time we're going to do a big jumble. You get to name three midfielders. I will be lenient whether they play wide or not, but give me three midfielders, please. Paddy.
Charlie Adam, absolutely terrific from start to finish. He was excellent again at Old Trafford yesterday, the Blackpool midfield player. Scott Parker, rightly voted Footballer of the Year by the Football Writers Association for his consistently magnificent performances for a team that in the end couldn't stay up. And finally, Ryan Giggs, who may not have played every game for Manchester United, but has been an absolute joy to watch in every game that he has played. So Charlie Adam, Scott Parker, Ryan Giggs, and my midfield trio.
You sure don't want to put Lee Bowyer in there? That way you could have a hat trick of guys who got their teams relegated this year. Allison.
Charlie Adam, because when he's playing, okay, you can't take Adam's your in. Eyes off right. him. Modric, partly because I doubted he was the great midfielder that Harry Redknapp claimed him to be, but having seen quite a lot of him, I was won over. He's surprisingly tough in the tackle and can break up opposition play as well as create it, and to have both talents is amazing, so he deserves to be in there. And Gareth Bale, because the start of this season he was one of the best players in the world, and he had pace but knew what to do with it.
Lansley.
Okay, Charlie Adam, yeah. Yousef Malumbu from West Bromwich Albion.
Ooh, good shout.
And Modric just ahead of Wilshere.
Uh-huh. Okay, so based on your selections, Charlie Adam is in. Luka Modric is in. Not one I necessarily agree with. For your final choice, you get to choose. I get to pick between Parker, Giggs, Bale, and Malumbu. I'm not going to go with Malumbu because people would be saying that I'm just sucking up to West Brom fans. I'm not going to go with Gareth Bale because he had half a season. I'm really torn on Scott Parker because he's actually a good person and we want to celebrate good people. And I shouldn't be going with Ryan Giggs either because he's a part-time player at this stage and often plays on the wing as well. So in the end, I will go with Scott. Same routine, your three strikers. Allison.
Okay, Kout playing right.
Oh my goodness.
So wait, mainly yeah. because...
Kout, Suarez and Carroll. Okay,
no,
I got it.
No, stop that. Kout. If I had access to all players, he'd be one of the first names down on my team sheet. That man has the most phenomenal energy levels. You can play him anywhere in a forward formation, a striker wide. He's getting his scoring boots this season. His attitude is amazing. I adore the man. He's got to play. No, it's not the reason.
Your
why
other two choices, Alison, please.
Van Persie. Because
he's Dutch,
almost
okay.
the opposite of Kout in that I don't love him or like him, and I find his style quite dull, but he's so blooming efficient. When he plays, he scores. And Van der Vaart, because he's the player that I wish Liverpool had signed and didn't.
Okay, this was Alison van Rudd, the our new Dutch correspondent. Okay, funny, I disagree with all of them, but hey, who am I to say? Lansley.
My wide men are Stuart Downing, who's been phenomenal for Aston Villa all season. Mm. Nasri, who was brilliant for two-thirds of the season. And Odom Zinghi, who was the find of the season.
Oh, Saze, I like that. Paddy.
Kout was very tempting. He'd be my first man in my squad every time. But my front players would be Nani, Chicharito, and in a tight battle between Nasri and Rooney, Nasri.
Okay, absolutely remarkable. The three of you managed to come up with eight different names, which is statistically is nearly impossible. Nasri gets in, I guess, because he was played rather well through February. I get lots of mega powers. By the way, shame on if George Culkin were here, he would be very angry because nobody thought to mention one Darren Bent.
I did think of him.
I'm well glad you thought of him, but unfortunately I can't get him in because of these stupid rules which I made up myself. Odom Zinghi is in there like a shot, no question about it. And goodness me, I look at this pile of fat guys, injured guys, unhappy guys, guys named Downing, and I will select Nani. Another guy who tailed off, but anyway. So your official 2011 game podcast team of the season is in goal Edwin van der Sar, across the back four we have Branislav Ivanovic, Vincent Kompany and Nemanja Vidic. Left back is Leighton Baines. In midfield, the tough tackling Scott Parker, the elegantly passing Charlie Adam, Luka Modric, who sort of looks like a young Johan Cruyff. And up front, it's Nani on one wing, it's Nasri on the other wing, and it's Peter Odom Zinghi through the middle. Time now for some quick hits. Manchester City went at Bolton and finished joint second on points with Chelsea. Paddy, did Mancini surpass expectations? And would Tevez leaving be such a problem?
Yes, he did. Mancini did surpass my expectations. I think he got stronger and stronger and stronger as the season went on. Absolutely terrific performance by him, and I eat my words. As far as Tevez is concerned, definitely not. Should be first man out the door. Doesn't want to be there, so let him go.
Aston Villa forget all about the doom and gloom of the start of the season and finish top 10, proving there's life after Martin O'Neill, as long as the owner splashes out on a Darren Bent year after year. Peter, what does the future hold at Villa Park?
I'm afraid we're in for a transitional phase, as I think the phrase goes, because Ashley Young will almost certainly leave, Stuart Downing may leave, and we don't know who the manager is going to be, I'm afraid, because of health reasons until the start of next season. If they could get someone of the calibre of David Moyes to come in, then I think they could build on ninth place.
Is McLeish out of bounds just because he's a Birmingham manager?
Good question. Do you know what? That's been occurring to me this morning. He's down at the training ground as we speak at Birmingham, suggests he might be out the door, and he's a very good manager in my book.
We love Big Ek. Alison, you'll be happy to get a Michael Owen question. Michael Owen tweeted a while back that he had one big goal left in him this season. Alison, was the fourth against Blackpool the one he was talking about? And where do you see the next step of young Michael's career?
Well, I think young 31-year-old Michael probably still wakes up in the morning dreaming that he's been brought on as a sub at Wembley and he scored the winning goal against Barcelona. And he's capable of doing that if he was to get the chance.
If he was on the bench too.
Even if he made it that far, yeah. I mean, the problem with Michael Owen is... I'd have hoped that the season at Old Trafford has taught him there's not much point in being at a big club that isn't going to play you every week. So he's still a fantastic player. The way he scored his goal against Blackpool, it was just he could have been 18 again. So he should play somewhere where they'll play him every week.
Anyway, Gab, question for you. Lille have completed the double in France. Will Rudy Garcia's men be a threat in the Champions League next season?
Sadly, no, because in the messed up economics of the Champions League, what basically happens is you become a victim of your own success. Adil Rami is already leaving. He signed with Valencia. It was so important for them at the back. Gervinho probably on his way out as well, not signed a new contract. Moussa Sal could follow. And of course, the biggest star of all, Eden Hazard. Also out there on the block. Thanks for joining us, and please remember you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find all your news, your gossip, your analysis, and also our web chats. Mine is coming up on Monday. You got Paddy's and Ollie K's during the week, Graham Spears as well, if your tastes run north of the border. Lots of good stuff for all of you out there. We're going to be back next week. Till then, toodaloo.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.